Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here on this Wednesday morning, July the 15th, 2026, exactly 15 minutes past the hour. Glad to have you with us here on WGH Talk Radio. And this hour, we are going to delve into Marion's past because there is a new book on the market right now written by a local author, Steve Phillips. The book is entitled Bean Shadows, and we are so glad to have Steve in the studio with us this morning. Steve, thank you for coming in this morning.
It's good to be with you, Scott.
Where did the idea for the book come about?
Well, I ran into some notes about, I don't know, it may have been 10 years ago, about my grandpa. Some things that I had written about my grandfather that he was like my hero. And I wrote these things, and the name of the notes I put on the top of the page was The Leaning House. And I just talked about my grandpa and things that he did. And I set that aside. So you know what? That would be a springboard for a book. And so I just started writing, and I put it aside, But the beginning of this was those notes I found about things I wrote about my grandpa.
What did you think about those notes would be compelling for an audience?
Well, because when I was reading them, I mean, I tried to step back for myself and say, is this something that people would be interested in? And I thought it would be. The way that my grandpa, shot food for Thanksgiving when we didn't have any meat. Just the different tales that he would tell me about how we were standing out there as kids, and he would say, we were working in the fields. We came in because there was a storm and it was lightning. And my grandpa said, I don't even know if any of this is true as far as what he told me, but my grandpa said it, so it's true. Mm-hmm. But he said, you know, lightning, he says, that cleans the air. I've never forgotten that. And I thought, oh, wow, cleans the air. Makes sense to me, that all that electricity. So I just thought, man, those things would be interesting for people to read. And then I looked at my own childhood and I thought, well, maybe some of it would be interesting. Maybe some people have gone through the same things that I've gone through.
Now, what is your background as far as it relates to Marion?
I was born in Marion, 1953. Actually, I was born in this building, I believe.
A lot of people say that over here.
I was born in this building and grew up here. Grew up in Marion, lived here until I went away to school in the 10th grade. 10th and 11th grade, went to a Christian high school and college combined in Kernersville, North Carolina. Actually, people say, why would you go there? Well, the girl that I liked went. She was in college. I was in high school. I was 15. She was 19. I had it going on back then, brother.
There you go.
So I did that. I came back, graduated from Marion Harding. Jobs all over the place. There were jobs everywhere. You could walk from one factory to another, and Steve Phillips could not find a job. I was working at a little place called Euler's Greenhouse. I don't know if you remember it. Euler's Greenhouse on Fairground and Tyler Streets. I was making, at that time, I'd worked myself up to $1.50 an hour. And so I was like, I got to find, because I got married. I'd won this girl's heart, And we got married, so I knew I had to find a job that made more money. Could not find one. And walking home one day, because I didn't have a car, very discouraged, a friend of mine, who is a local pastor here now, his name, Bill Middleton, I think his name was. His mom's name was that. But anyway, he came up to me, and he said, why don't you, he said, what are you doing? I said, I'm looking for a job. Can't find one. Why don't you go in the military? And at that time in my life, I had a temper. And I thought, man, I could never take the military. I'd end up hitting somebody or something. So, but anyway, his words was a seed in my brain. And I went in the Air Force. I spent 4 years in the Air Force. I got out and went to Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Daytona Beach, Florida. I was studying to be an Air Force pilot. And then we stayed down in Florida for several years, and we moved back in 1987 when my father passed away. And Hope's, my wife's name was Hope, her mom passed away that same summer. So I've been here ever since. But I love Marion. I've always loved Marion. The places I've moved around, Scott, people always complain about their hometown, but they don't look around to see what they have. I've always loved. Are there bad things? Yeah, absolutely. There's bad things everywhere, but you look for the good.
Now, it's interesting how this book is written. This book is essentially a collection of short stories, would you mm-hmm. say?
Yep.
How did that come to be? How did that idea develop?
Well, I wrote the book the way I like to read books, which is short chapters. So I tried to make it a consolidated, condensed period of time up to I was about 7 years old. So as you read the book there, you saw that I talked about my first cognitive moment when I was in my baby bed. I remember my mom out back hanging up clothes, and so that's, I thought these stories would be interesting to tell people. So I just wrote it the way I like to read, which is short chapters. Because with me, I don't know what it is, Scott. I think it's time. It's not just since I've gotten older. I'm 73 years old now. But I think my whole life I've been consumed with time. And so if I'll see a book on the shelf and I'll say, man, that looks interesting, I'll pick it up. And if the chapter is 40 pages long, I'm not going to read it. I just won't do it because I don't like to break in the middle of a chapter. Just something to me. So I wrote this like that, and the short stories, I tried to keep them as sequential as I could because I knew some of my friends were going to be reading this. Mm-hmm. And I almost didn't write the book because I was afraid of that. Because I was afraid they'd say, well, that's not the way it happened. That's not the way it really happened. It was this way, kind of like that way. But here again, it's how I remembered it. I put that disclaimer in the front of the book for that reason. So people say, okay, I don't remember it that way, Steve, but, well, that's the way he remembers it. So,
what makes a good short story?
Well, I think a good short story has to have something to capture your attention in the beginning and not too far in. And then you have to have it. Obviously, it has to be something interesting to people that you know that's going to have a broad range of interest. So, you know, you don't want something that's going to be so narrow that people won't be interested in it. And then you got to capture that, you develop it, and then have. But as you notice, my stories, sometimes they don't have a real firm end. Sometimes they flow right into the next one. So,
well, it's kind of interesting because I was just looking at some of the chapter titles here. And for people who are interested in Marion history, there are things in here that would certainly ring a bell, mm-hmm. like the Jim Dugan's gold mine.
Yeah.
You know, what was it about Jim Dugan's?
Yeah.
We've talked about a lot of history on this show. It's been gone now probably half a century at least. Mm. What was it about Jim Dugan's?
Jim Dugan's was the place where, I mean, it was service. You could go in there. They would wait on you. They would know. They would know almost what size you were when they saw you.
Clothing store.
It was a clothing store. And so it was just a neat place. I didn't shop in there that often because, quite frankly, my family couldn't afford it. It's not that they were pricey, but
a little high end.
Yeah, a little bit higher end. But the service and everything and the hometown thing. I don't know where that gentleman was from, where Jim Dugan was from. If it was, I don't even know if that. I don't think it was a chain, but I just remember that how it was. But they always had those amazing sidewalk sales. That's why it prompted me to go up there and get some school clothes.
You know, and there is a tie with Jim Dugan's to radio because, just to speak to the staying power of Jim Dugan's, when we did our 67th anniversary at WMRN, it was either 12 or 1 o'clock neighborhood news with Joe Ione. sponsored by Jim Dugan's.
Okay.
And there was a spiel every day that Joe would do. You know, this is news brought to you by our about people, places, and plans.
Yeah.
Brought to you by Jim Dugan's.
Jim Dugan.
And when we did that anniversary, long after Jim Dugan's was gone, Joe, who is gone now, he was there then. One of the requests we got was, could you read the opening to the neighborhood news, which was brought to you by Jim Dugan's.
By Jim Dugan's. Wow. Yeah, that was, I can still see the sign on the front of the building. And now it's a bank computer place, I think, is what it is now.
Right.
Yep.
But there are those things in this book that, that strike a chord with people.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Things that people, I mean, I've gotten very good responses. One response I got was, it was from a relative. And they said, yeah, your book was okay. I thought, okay, a resounding okay. Thank you. Yeah. I'm going to jump up and down. Yeah, but they said, yeah, it probably interests people that knew this place. Like, it was almost like nobody else is going to be interested in, which I don't agree with. But anyway, yeah, it's that's basically, there's a lot of stuff in there about the about Marion. You know, I mentioned Crawballs, and I don't want to get into your notes or whatever, but Crawballs Hardware. Were you here when Crawballs?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You remember the fire? I was in the Air Force when that happened. I don't remember where I was exactly, but they told me about it. And Crawballs burnt down at Snow's Racket Store.
Oh, absolutely, Snow's.
Snow's Racket
Store. That's another one of those places.
Yeah. Snow's Racket Store. You remember, you can ask me any question you want about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the Snow's Racket Store catastrophe, as I think I titled it.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk okay. because that's very, very close to people's hearts, Snow's Racket Store.
Well, Snow's Racket Store was this place that, and my dad would go there frequently because he always needed this. He needed some screws. And I think it was kind of a hardware, da-da-da-da-da. And I remember when I saw it, man, I thought, man, I saw a store just like this on the Lone Ranger. This is the place. It had mops in the corner and fan belts and anything that you want. Snow's Racket Store. And I always, in the book I say, and I actually did think about this when I was a kid, what in the world is a racket? I thought maybe it was something to do with tennis. I knew there was a thing as a tennis racket, and I still to this day don't know if that's what it meant. But Snow's Racket Store, you could get anything you want. That day in my book that I had the catastrophe, my dad was going to get some stovepipe because I don't know what was wrong because our stove was running. So I don't know, maybe we're all getting slowly fumigated. I don't know. But dad knew he needed that. He got out his measuring tape and we took a cab. We took a cab to Snow's Racket Store. You open the door, Scott. The little ding, 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 the little bell goes off, little hanging one, not electronic, little hanging one. And it just, I know things have changed, and sometimes I get nostalgic, but I wish some things were still the way they used to be. And I'm sure there's some people listening out there that might have the same thoughts. When Hope and I, when my wife and I were in Florida when I was in college, we used to purposely go to a little town. We were in Daytona Beach. We would purposely go to a little town called DeLand, Florida, which is the seat of Volusia County, Florida. We would purposely go over there so we could find old buildings and walk on the floors and hear them creak. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Because it brought back memories of what it was. So Snow's Racket Store was that kind of place.
What do you think it is about places like Snow's and Jim Dugan's that are still remembered today? Now, there were a lot of other stores in that era, and even some that probably did better business, but they're not remembered with that kind of fondness.
Right, right. I think maybe it was the just the way the customer service was back then, the variety of things they had. Maybe, well, of course, it wouldn't have been nostalgic maybe back then because it was now, like your show now with Scott Spear. It was now. It was the time when you were there, but I think it's because it was a part of history. I mean, it was a part of Marion's history, and I think that's one of the reasons people still think about those. They think about Jim Dukins. They think about Chef Shoes. Have you ever heard of Chef Shoes?
I have.
Chef Shoes. It was all in this area. Well, I don't know north, south, east, and west, even though I was a pilot. I don't know. I had to depend on my instruments. But Chef Shoes and Jim Dukins and then you had Crawlball and you had Snow's Racket Store there. And of course, you always had Faye Bank in that area and those type of things. So,
you know, it's interesting that those what is always fascinating to me, those places stick out. But there were also places here in that era that became, well, really world famous. Isley's. Certainly.
Yes.
L&K.
L&K. Ludwig and Kibbe.
Yes.
Yeah.
And those places are remembered fondly by people,
yeah.
but you know, these little stores that just had one store, a lot of times are even remembered more fondly and purposeful than those big stores.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a, well, when I go to another town, I always try to find a mom and pop restaurant. I love mom and pop restaurants. Most of the time they're good. Sometimes they're not so good, but I'm not real picky. So, but I think it's a thing of knowing that this is a family, this is a person that put their blood and guts into a place. Really, is what I like, and I just like the home feel of it. Around Marion, there used to be over on Fairground Street, used to be a place called Fair Park Family Restaurant. I don't know if you remember it.
Yes.
I loved that place.
Yeah.
It was so good. I remember, Scott, when I came back, because I've always loved Marion. I hear people complain. It bothers me. I just let them talk. But I've always loved Marion. I love the history of it. I love, you know, named after, you know, the Swamp Fox. And I've always loved it, but when I came back, I had a business in Florida. Things were falling apart and fast, and so I said my dad had died. I came home. Hopi stayed in. She stayed in Daytona Beach. I couldn't afford to fly all of us home. I went there, and I was already feeling a pull to move back because there just wasn't the hometown feel in Daytona Beach. So I went over and I sat in that Fair Park Family Restaurant, and I was sitting there, and these farmers came in. There was like three or four farmers around a table. They were talking about their crops, and they were talking about how well they're going to do this year or not so well, and the struggles. And it was so, I felt like a warm blanket around me, and I just started crying. And I called Hope. I said, I want back in my hometown. I want to come back here. I said, this is what I'm missing. So that going to that restaurant that day, it was kind of like a deciding factor.
Well, you know, and I think it there are a lot of things very interesting about Marion. Even just the little conversation we had when you came in the studio, you were talking about Madge Cooper, because
yep.
we have Madge on the wall
right,
here.
Right.
You say you remember listening to her program when you were younger.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Madge Cooper, Charlie Evers. I remember all of them pretty much when I was – I love AM radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a move on, I don't know if it's by the manufacturers or what, to take AM radios out of cars,
mm-hmm.
which I hate because that's about all I listen to is AM radio. Plus, I have my FM Christian stations that I listen to, but I listen to AM radio a lot. I listen to WMRL. I actually listen to, can't remember the call letters, it's 760 AM out of Detroit.
Mm.
Very good talk radio. They have a great. Even though it's Michigan.
You know, I'm trying to – that is a good station.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. There's a Paul W. Smith, who is one of the announcers. Or I guess he's pretty famous in that area.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's those people and those things that I think have given this town a very homey feel.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, you have things like President Harding, Marilyn Meskey, Miss America from
mm-hmm.
Marion.
Right.
And of course, Mary Ellen Withrow, who's still here,
yes.
moved back home.
Is she
– She's here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
So I think it's you combine all of that and you get a very hometown feel.
Yeah.
In regard.
You can if you choose to. If you don't choose to look at all the bad stuff. I mean, I still live, Scott, in the area that I grew up in. Now, I had lived other places, but Hope and I needed a home. And so we found this house that had been abandoned for 12 years. and we fixed it up and made it a beautiful home. And somebody, every once in a while, somebody will say, "You have the nicest house in this area." I've said, "Well, I sure hope so." Because, yeah, it's not the best area, but all the people are nice. I haven't had any problems. I live on Polk Street in Marion. So President Polk Street, by the way, I used to live on President Adams Street. And so, yeah, the book is all about stories in that area. And I had some people at my book signing that I did just last Saturday that grew up in that area. They stopped by and bought a book, and we chatted a little bit. So, oh, yeah, I remember that. I remember that. So, yeah.
Now, another thing we talked about when you first came in was – had to do with this building.
Yes.
A significant event happened with your father in this building.
Right. Well, in the Being Shadows, the title of this book, Being Shadows, I equated the shadow of that soybean factory. Those of you who are familiar with Marion, I equated the shadow of that bean factory with all the things that were happening to me. The shadow of poverty, the shadow of the drunkenness, the shadow of the abuse, all these type of things. And so that's one of the things that happened was, as a little boy, I remember, I think it was my Uncle Bud or my Uncle Jim, I don't remember which one of them, picked me up and set me on the fender of their car, and I was talking to my dad through one of these windows, which was the jail. He had been put in jail for drinking and driving. So, that's what happened. I remember it was sun was in my eyes. I couldn't really see him, but I could hear him. He'd say, "What are you doing out there, feller?" And I'd say, "Daddy, where are you?" They would say, "He's right over there." I never could see him, but I could hear his voice. So, yeah. That was in this very building. I think the cells are still there in this building.
What is the most significant story to you in the book?
Well, the most significant story. Wow. I think it was probably one of them that I almost didn't put in. It was a dark story called The Long Ride Home. You remember that, that one? And it was about me being sexually abused when I was a child. And I think it was the 20-some-year-old brother of one of my friends. And so I remember reading that. I can still remember that vividly. So basically, I remember a friend read my book, and he said, every time I go past that place, many people know Pop Wiley's.
Mm-hmm.
Pop Wiley's, that's where it happened. And I still remember it. And I think about it every time I go past that place. Every time. And this friend wrote this book. He said, I want to go burn that place down. I said, it wasn't the building. Mm. It was, you know, what happened. So.
And this happened 60 years ago.
50?
No,
60. I would say maybe 65 years ago.
65 years ago.
66 years ago, probably. I think it was a little bit before I turned 7. I might have been 5. I don't remember the date. Some of the stuff I've kind of blanked out of my brain.
You know, I've heard people who have written books say things like you just said in regard to that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm not sure if I should put that in, but then if you don't put that in, you're not really telling the whole story.
Not telling the whole story.
Of your childhood.
Right. That's exactly right. And I thought, because, you know, I tried to interweave humor, and I think you found some of it to be humorous. And I thought, man, this chapter is going to turn the whole thing dark. And there was a danger in that, but I thought... So I thought, but I left it in, and others told me, says, "I'm glad that you left it in."
Now, were there names and just people, relationships to you that you had to leave out in the book?
Names. I don't think, as you know, I didn't do any last names.
Right, right.
But there were not names, per se, but there were events that I didn't put in there that, like, was some of the characters. I just thought, I'm not going to tell that about that. There were some things that I didn't tell about my father. My dad was not, one of the things I was worried about, Scott, was that my dad would come across as this abusive man. He was not. He was not. He was a wonderful man. It's just alcohol and all that stuff mixed together was what did it. But I would, there was a lot of there were a lot of things about, I don't know if you remember, on and when a bunch of us boys got to the quarry, the forbidden place of all the planet, we were never to go there. Mm-hmm. And I looked up and saw my dad there. Well, there was a reason my dad was there. I found out later, and it wasn't happenstance that he came there and found me. He was there for an assignment of somebody, and so I won't go any further into that because I didn't want to put it in my book, and I won't. But it was, yeah. There was a few events that I didn't put in there, but not people. I think I pretty much mentioned everybody that came to my mind anyway. But that neighborhood was awesome, Scott. It was so awesome. I just there was a girl in my book. Her name was Patty, and she was one of the girls on the front porch of the with the cigar story. And we've stayed in touch over the years, and she lives in Dayton, I think, now. But there's so many, that whole family, her family, all of them, everybody in that neighborhood, as I might have stated this in the book, was touched by poverty in some way. Some of it was, I think I said this, some of it was because they couldn't get a good job. Maybe the father didn't have the skills or whatever. But the poverty that we had was because of alcohol. And so, but most everybody was in the same boat. You know, I think I say this in the book too. People say, well, we were poor growing up, but we didn't know it. And I said in the book, the kind of poverty I'm talking about was not one to be anonymous. Mm. It didn't stay anonymous. I knew on the nights when the fuel oil ran out and when you didn't have enough of this. We never went hungry. No, never went hungry. Dad always made sure that we had groceries and stuff like that. But might not have been what we wanted, but man alive, my dad was the best cook in the world. Mm. Oh, Scott, he was so good.
When you reflect back on your childhood like this, mm-hmm. because not everybody does that every day.
Yeah.
And you go to these stories and find out why your father was at the quarry and being sexually abused at a young age and all these things. Does it send you on some kind of catharsis in your 70s?
Well, yes, I think somewhat. Somewhat it does. But I will tell you, it really makes me thankful that I am where I am, that I've gotten come out of. I mean, I'm by no means a rich man or anything like that. But as you know, as people who read this book, and I hope that they will order it. It's on Amazon. It's on Amazon. And you just go Amazon.com and type in Bean Shadows. I think you'll enjoy it. But I think most of all, it makes me thankful of where I've arrived at and where I'm doing, the good marriage I had, all those things. So, yeah.
And again, we've got about 19 minutes left here this morning. The book is entitled Bean Shadows. Steve Phillips is the author. You can get it on Amazon. That's a great place to get it. Do you know about how much it costs on Amazon?
$14.99.
$14.99. Not a bad price at all, certainly, for a book of this stature at this particular point. What do you hope people take away after they read this?
I hope that people, I really want them, like, feel like I had victory in this book. The Bean Shadows that were like trying to get me, and then I got victory over that. So I hope they see that. I hope they see some of their childhood. That's what I'm hearing from people. When I read this, Steve says it made me think about the stories when I was a kid. So I'm hoping that people will get that out of the book. That you know, it's just helps them to reminisce a little bit about their childhood and what they went through and all that stuff. So not everybody. Some people have, but most people do not are not born with a silver spoon in their mouth. They're just not. So
now the epilogue in the book is interesting. The ending. When you wrote that, what kind of things were running through your mind?
Oh my! Well, I was trying to tie everything together, and talk about how the neighborhood was when I grew up. Versus how it is now, because I still live in that same neighborhood. All the fruit trees were gone. I don't even know. We must have killed every one of those things, because we would climb in them as kids, take the salt shaker and go out and eat green apples and get warned that we might die from eating green apples, you know, and all that stuff. So I wanted people to see in that epilogue, I wanted them to see what the neighborhood was like then versus now. Like I talk about the plum tree. That plum tree is completely gone. The pear tree is completely gone. I don't see an apple tree. When we were kids, we fancied this. I don't know if it was true, but we thought Johnny Appleseed planted all these apple trees. He came through here with his bag of seed, and he planted all these apples. That's what we thought. It may have been true, maybe not. I don't even know. But John Chapman, I don't even know if he was a real character or not. But so we did that. I wanted people to see, you know, maybe a little bit about all my friends, because we had, that was back when there was no video games. You played outside, you know, your friends, your mom would make you a jug of Kool-Aid and you know, expect you to not be under their feet and all that stuff. But I think that that's really what I wanted to do is take and look what it used to be, what it is now. In many ways, my neighborhood is better than it was. We have sewers now, which we didn't have back then. In the time of my book, everybody had an outhouse. Everybody had an outhouse, and there was no sewers. We didn't have running water in the first house we had. So I think that I just wanted to show the difference in how the neighborhood was then, and then I wanted to talk about my friends. It was so funny, Scott. You know, one of my characters in the book was Keithy. Mm-hmm. Okay, because everybody had an IE or a Y on their name. I was Stevie, Keithy, Ronnie, da 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 da. So I think I said in my book, the only one to escape that was Homer. it couldn't be Homery. Somebody told me, he said, yeah, but it could have been Homie. I said, yeah. Well, we didn't even think about that back then. But Keithy was sort of like the leader. He was a little bit more mature and all that stuff. There are many stories, like about the soybean factory, that I didn't write about. Like, I remember Keithy was more mature, like I said. And one day, we wanted to build a ball field. You know, the corner of Mark Street and Jefferson, there's a weigh station where they come in and get their, I don't know if they weigh them or if they poke them for moisture. I don't know what they do. But all that was a field then. And Keithy said, we're going to build a ball field here. So we went in. I went with him. He went in and talked to the manager of that place. He was probably 8 years old at the time, went in there and said, yeah, we want to build a ball field here. And I'm going, I'm shaking in my shoes. And he's talking to him like he's 24 years old, you know. So we built that ball field. We did it. But we had all the fathers said, play ball, but you know there's a church right there. You can't play on Sunday mornings. So we were respectful enough not to play. But yeah, there was. I think I talked there about my friend Ricky, who died in Vietnam, and every once in a while I find myself misty eyed thinking about Ricky. He was our Marion Star rep, and. I was in that Christian school that I was telling you about earlier in North Carolina when my mom told me. I remember crying. I just thought, oh my goodness. And so yeah, that's kind of why I wanted to do that is just bring it all together.
When you drive through Marion today as a whole and think about it in this era, what are the big differences?
I think one of the big differences I see is in the homes and how they're not kept up. That bothers me. When we came back to Marion in 1987, Hopi said, man, a lot of these houses, they need a coat of paint. What's going on? I said, sweetheart, when you are just trying to make ends meet, you don't worry about a coat of paint. So I think a lot of the places in Marion have gone downhill. There's a lot of, I know we're having some financial problems. Don't understand all that. I don't get it. I'm not pointing my fingers at anybody, but something's going on. And because, like, you can't even get the city to mow high lot. There's a lot of that stuff bothers me. And I'm an old man. I got bad knees, but I thought, is there a way we can get volunteers to do that? And there was a young man that came and mowed the corner lot there right across from me. And I think he was doing the volunteer work. He was from some realtor. He filmed me. I don't know if it's online or not on Facebook, but so those, I see that difference. A lot of the industry's gone, but that's this whole area, this whole, they shipped it all over, and I think now they're deciding we need to bring some of that back. But like there used to be, you know, Eaton Manufacturing, Tecumseh. I know Mr. Euler worked at a place called, I think it was Pollock Steel. I think so. And so there was a lot more factories and stuff than there are now. But all in all, I still love it, though.
Did you learn anything about yourself writing the book?
Yes, I learned that I could be a little bit more disciplined than what I think I am. And it was a challenge, actually, from my best friend, Paul, who lives in Florida. We talk at least once a week. And I'd tell him about the book and all. He said, well, how are you doing? How's the progress coming? And he challenged me. He said, this is what I want you to do. He said, I want you to get up an hour early every day. And I want you to do something on your book. Something on your book, something on your book. And so, not that I was always pristine about that, but I took that to heart. And so I realized that I could do it if I did. I would love to do another one. I've got some more. I would like to do a mystery almost. I'd like to do that. So I've got some ideas in my head, but I learned that about myself, that I can do something. It made me feel good to get it done. Mm-hmm. I remember I had the book finished in November, and I'm not technical at all. This table is more technical than I am. And so I began praying. I said, Lord, I need somebody to help me how to do this. I don't know how to do it. I'd try, and I'd get all discombobulated. And so I saw a sign that said tech shop. I used to sell Rob Meyer advertising when I worked at the Marion Star. I said, I wonder, he's a great guy. I wonder if he would have some ideas of where I could go. He says, yeah. He said, I got a friend I think can help you. And through this friend who took it upon himself to help me, I didn't know what I was doing. He helped me get it published. He helped me. He did all the logistics for me. Spent a lot of work. He did. He was, yeah.
When you first saw the book completed in book form, what was that like?
I got to admit, I was proud of it. I felt good. The cover turned out better than I thought, because this is just one of their standard covers that you can choose from. The thing of this right here, maybe it seemed like it, but this person that was helping me says, you haven't even written anything for the back cover. I said, I didn't even know I was supposed to. I said, give me 2 minutes. So I wrote this here and just dictated on my phone and sent it to him. And then now here it is on print. And so I told, hey, he says to me, Scott, he says, now I'm a widower. He says, I said, well, I want to get my picture on. Well, why do you want your picture on there? You're trying to attract chicks? I said, well, that wouldn't be bad. Yeah. No, I was just kidding. But I said, no. I said, most books I see have that. I didn't know what I was doing. But God helped me. Scott helped me. His name was Scott, by the way. And so he helped me a lot through that.
What do you hope for this book? If somebody were to pull this book off a bookshelf 30, 40 years from now, what do you hope they get from it?
I hope that it reminds them of their childhood, reminds them of their friends. Maybe it reminds them of some battles that they came through, that they were successful, that they lived through. That's what I hope to do.
Is there any story you did leave out?
No, I don't believe so. I think there were segments of things that, like, well, I talked to you about the thing with the quarry with my dad.
Right.
I didn't tell about any of that stuff. There's headlines in the Marion Star about that. So you notice I did that a lot. I said, I could just see the headlines in the Marion Star.
Yeah.
But no, I don't think I left out anything. But there's a lot more I could write.
Right.
A lot more than I could. And I had somebody ask me if I was going to do a sequel. I want to get this one off the ground and running fine. So, yeah, I'm I'm hoping that it will sell.
Is there something that came to your mind after this book and you thought, boy, I wish I would have gotten it in that book?
No, I can't really think of anything right offhand that there was something that I said, ah, man, I should have done that. Because I really pored over this and thought about it and thought about my childhood. I think I got pretty much everything in there that I wanted in this one. Mm-hmm. So I the book length, I mean, it's not a tremendously long book. A person that reads well could probably read it in 3-4 hours. I don't know how long it would take them. But I think it's an easy read. I think it's enjoyable. And that's what I'm hearing from people anyway, that they're enjoying reading it.
The significance of the title, Bean Shadows,
yeah.
What does that mean to you?
The Bean Shadows, like I was saying, is it. I equated the poverty, the strife, the brokenness, the drunkenness, the abuse. I equated it like that. Those were all a part of that shadow of the bean factory. Like I said, it sounds dark. I tell people it sounds dark, but there's humor in it. But that's why, because that bean factory was, it's still big to me. It's still big. So that's what the significance of the title is, the shadow of that bean factory and how it followed me. The one thing that I talked about over at the Amish horse auction and how, you know, I could almost feel the shadow. It was two counties away, but I could still feel the shadow of that bean factory because I was feeling down.
What do you think is the significance of the bean factory?
The significance of it is, like I said, it's just the... It was just a symbol. I think it was bigger than life to me, and maybe at that time I thought these problems are bigger than me. They'll never go away, and it was just a neat place. I thought, you know, the one thing where we broke into there, and those doors are all welded shut now. By the way, every time I go past it, I think about that night. Though I think about us, we were all sleeping out. All hauling through that door and going playing in the beans. And I was in one pile of beans and you sink way down and it felt like, you know, my imagination. I said, I think a muskrat just bit me. There'd be a muskrat. There's no muskrats around here. So, but it's the significance of that bean factory because it was huge. It was insurmountable. It was something I think I thought I would never escape, but I did.
Who do you think had the biggest impact on your life during this period of your life?
The biggest impact, well, there were several. Mr. Bingman, my elementary school teacher, Mr. Bingman was amazing, amazing man. People who went to Mark Street Elementary School will know that. Believe it or not, I mean, I think that a lot of it was my dad. I mean, I love my dad. He was a great man. I mean, if people that read the book, they're going to see that there were some things that happened. He was a great influence. I think people like Keithy, he was a great influence on me. I would say envied, because his home was always nice. His mom always kept his home nice. They always drove a newer car. I'm not saying they're rich. He worked at, remember, Fairfield Engineering? That's where the dad worked. But so I think he influenced me. I'm trying to think if there was anybody else. But mainly those people were influences on my life.
Is there any lesson we can learn today from the past?
Lessons we can learn from the past is that don't give up. Don't give up. Look back where you were. Look and see, am I better or worse? Like the, you know, optometrist, better or worse? Better or worse? You're going to get your eyes checked. Is my life better now? Are there things that I can improve? So I think we have to look at that from the canvas of the past, where I was versus where I am now. Mm. So we can do that. We can learn from that, okay, now I'm this way. Now I'm that way. One thing I did learn, I don't touch alcohol. I learned that for sure.
In our final few minutes here, how hard is it to write a book?
I would say gathering your thoughts. I don't think it's very hard, really. It's not hard, the writing of it, getting it to be sequential. Now, one of the things I did, I found, is I got things, because I was writing a little bit here, and then I'd set it aside, writing a little bit thing. I was referring to things that I hadn't, like I remember in one of the chapters I said, I told you that my dad was an innovator. And I got to thinking, I've not mentioned that in any of the previous chapters. So that's one of the reasons that I did the prologue and the epilogue, because the prologue set everything up. So hard to do. It's not hard. If my brother-in-law was asking me, he says, Steve, how do you do that? How do you just? I said, I don't know. I just, it opens up and I open my mouth and it starts coming out.
Mm. Well, it's a fun book to read and available on Amazon. Is there any other way people can get it?
At my book signings, when those are around, I just did one downtown at the Remnant Tea and Coffee. I'm going to be doing one at the public library. They have not given me the date on that one yet. That's going to happen in September. I think that's for all local authors. So, but I'm very happy about that one. So,
well, you'll have to give us the date when it comes about. Yeah. And again, it is available on Amazon. So if you wanted to get it today, you could do that. It's the title Bean Shadows. Steve Phillips is the author. Steve, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thanks, Scott.
It's been a lot of fun.
Yes.
For this day, Scott Spears heading for the dugout.
Same time, you have to look at yourself and see whether they're right or not.
Do you go home at night, Helen, and think, my goodness, this person said,